What up, pack? It's your boy Z-Dog MD, Tom and Logan in the house. Ooh, it's high noon, yo, and we're talking about some serious-ish, and that is suicide. More specifically, perceptions around suicide attempts in the hospital by hospital personnel, because this is something we are nervous to talk about because we imagine ourselves practitioners of the compassionate arts. But there is some data and some suggestion and some anecdotal evidence to argue that hospital personnel do not take kindly to people who try to end their own lives, which is very shocking because these are people who are suffering with a disease called depression, generally speaking. Let's talk about it. And Tom had brought up this bit about a new Netflix show.
So, you haven't seen this show on Netflix called 13 Reasons Why, correct?
No, I have not, because I don't watch TV, because I have no time, because I work, because I'm not a millennial.
This is a new show that depicts a teen suicide, and it's coming under fire for its glamorization of suicide. A lot of people online are saying basically the controversy is they're saying that by showing a suicide, you inherently glamorize it.
Well, that's interesting because I you had played me one tiny clip before this thing started, and I was like, I don't ever want to see that again. That was horrifying. Nothing glamorous about suicide. Nothing glamorous about cutting your wrists. Nothing glamorous about dying in a bathtub filled with blood. However, I could see why people might say that, especially in the teen crowd where everybody's brooding and goth and, like, you know, about drama. But the problem, I mean, I think the bottom line is mental health in this country is crap. It's a mess. Everybody's understaffed, overworked, and we don't have proper systems in place to take care of people who suffer from depression, bipolar, anything that might contribute to suicidal ideation and actual suicide attempts.
Maria Adolf says, I don't think so. I think it brings awareness. And there is a counter argument here that says that, you know, it's allowing her, the teen girl who kills herself in the series, to have agency by, you know, telling her side of the story. But then the opposite side of that is it glamorizes it because it's like, oh, look at me, you'll miss me when I'm gone, you know?
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, I would tend to agree with Chelsea Allen, definitely not glamorized. If anything, it's a deterrent. I mean, the one clip you showed me was, I was affected in a way. I was like, no, I'm gonna stop watching that right now and I'm gonna continue editing video because it's so disturbing. But now remember, it all depends on your perspective and your state of mind when you're watching these things. So if you're a kid contemplating suicide, maybe you're watching the show, the series, and you're thinking, ah, that doesn't look so bad. Or you know what, maybe it'll lead to eternal, you know, glorification of my story if I die in this way. And that would be very hard. And I also wanna hear from Z-Packers who've lost loved ones to suicide, because I get a lot of private messages about this. It's a huge topic. We're just gonna graze the surface today, but it's gonna be something we talk about fairly regularly.
Mary Brockett says suicide is contagious, and that's one of the criticisms of this show, is that they worry that it will create teen copycat suicides.
So this is a sort of known phenomenon, and actually there, when someone kills themselves in a high school, often there's a cluster of suicides that happen with relatively forthwith. And the idea is that there is a sort of a legitimization and a copycat phenomenon that happens. And so could a show like this promote that, or is it actually raising awareness so that we can end up doing things that actually matter, like changing funding for mental illness, destigmatizing the idea of mental illness, especially suicide? And sort of speaking of destigmatizing, is there a stigma with suicide attempt among healthcare providers in hospital or clinic settings? And there is a study in a journal that sounds very whack, the Health Science Journal. I actually don't know much about this journal, so it might be something legit. It was a Greek study, and they were saying they actually polled healthcare professionals and found that there was, particularly in non-psychiatrists, so psychiatrists saw someone who attempted suicide as a huge opportunity to help and to save somebody because, wow, they didn't succeed, now we can intervene and actually save a life. Whereas medical personnel, particularly ICU personnel, et cetera, felt very differently. They felt like we're spending all these resources keeping this person alive who wanted to die and who went out of their way to try to create this situation themselves. And there was a stigma and a judgment. And patients who were polled felt like they were treated differently after a suicide attempt and that sort of thing. So I wanted to ask the Z-Pack, because I'll tell you, anecdotally, I have experienced this 100% in the hospital, that the attitude towards suicide attempts in the ICU whether they're young or old, is very different to someone who comes in with random sepsis. There is either an unconscious or conscious judgment that I think this person is asking for this. They made this decision. Why are we trying to stop them? We have patients who didn't do this to themselves, and you're drawing resources away. And these are horrible things. And if you think about it morally and ethically, if you're truly compassionate, you'll say, no, this is someone who's suffering with a disease, and we can help them and save them. And that's our job to do this, to give them another chance, right? And if we were to imagine what it's like to be in that person's shoes, that they're so desperate that they're willing to kill themselves, you know, that time when you use empathy, you might actually really feel like, okay, all right, this person deserves our help as much as anyone else, maybe sometimes more so. But that's not the general prevailing consensus in hospitals, according to the study and according to my own experience. So what do you guys think, Zipak?
Well, you know, is there a difference in the severity of suicide attempts also? Like, if somebody took 30 Tylenols, that's a little different attempt than somebody who slit their own wrists?
Well, actually, I'm glad you brought up Tylenol, because somebody slits their own wrist, if you actually catch them and you resuscitate them and you give them blood and you save them, that's a quick, usually complicationless event, unless you box your kidneys or do other organ damage from the hypovolemia from losing the blood. However, if you take Tylenol, and this is where I find the hospital-based judgment of these patients, in other words, staff will say, oh, this patient, God, is like young people or older people who decide they're going to take an overdose of Tylenol. And the perception is it's a gesture rather than a real attempt. It's a cry for help. But since the patient doesn't understand that an overdose of Tylenol, first of all, it can seriously kill you. But if it doesn't kill you, it can damage your liver so severely that you need a transplant. And that puts you on a list where you're fighting with other people who have been waiting on transplant lists forever, right? For acute fulminant hepatic failure. You're fighting with people who did not try to kill themselves to get this. And so there's a feeling that, wow, this person is uneducated, did the wrong thing, picked the wrong drug to do a gesture, and there's a lot of judgment. I've seen that with Tylenol overdose. Emergency physicians encounter this a lot because, you know, they have to go through the nomogram and everything, and Tylenol overdose is something that's not uncommon. Did you know that, Tom? Did you know that Tylenol will box your liver as a muggle? Was this something that was
on your list? I know that Tylenol is bad for your liver.
Right.
You know, but I don't know how bad. I don't really take Tylenol.
Right.
Because I like hydrocodone. Sup.
Which, by the way, if you're taking Vicodin, has Tylenol in it.
And I know. Stop doing that, man. It's bad for my liver.
Good Lord.
I want to read a comment from Amanda Wilkie, who says, I don't think it's glamorizing it at all. I think it's bringing awareness, and I don't think they're making it out to be a joke. The problem I had with the suicide attempt on the show, for the people who've seen it, this is a spoiler alert, so if you haven't seen it, maybe cut the feed if you, you know. The big problem I had was there was no regret. She cuts her wrist and then she just lays back and dies. You know, I think it would have been more real if they had done a scene where maybe she does it and then she goes, oh shit, this is an action I can't take back, and she sort of scrambles for the door in an attempt to save her own life.
And that's a very common reaction in people who attempt these sort of things, particularly the more violent methods. And you know, men are more likely to use guns, women are more likely to use less violent methods, men tend to be very impulsive. And by the way, Logan, if there's a gun in the house, the chances of the actual suicide attempt occurring and succeeding are higher. But I know Logan's never gonna turn any of his 70,000 weapons on himself, he's just gonna turn them on an unsuspecting burglar who will then be riddled like Swiss cheese. By the way, never try to rob Logan Stewart.
That's he may thing. Climb a watchtower, people, okay?
I'm not gonna put it, no. So what were we talking about, Tom, before I accused Logan of being a mass murderer?
Jennifer Frady says, our mental health is horrible. From a nurse that lost her brother and slowly losing her mother to schizophrenia, there are zero resources for crisis situations. I think anything that brings awareness to a growing trend of mental health issues for our kids and teens is a great thing. Everything starts with a conversation. And this is an interesting point because the show is upping the numbers of calls into suicide prevention hotlines. So some people are reaching out, and I guess it is having a positive benefit in that way.
I think that my own elephant is telling me it's a good thing because it's forcing us to have this conversation. And the truth is, if you look at the area under the curve, if you provoke a couple of kids over that precipice that they were already standing on, they see the show and they go, you know what, I'm gonna go ahead and do this. That's a horrible thing, but if you save, you know, a thousand lives because people are calling suicide prevention hotlines or they're having the conversation or they're waking up and realizing maybe this isn't something I should do. I mean, honestly, Tom, when I saw the scene at the end that you were talking about,
right.
That you forced me to watch on your phone, I mean, I was nauseous. Like, it's a horrible thing. And I was projecting, like, what if my own daughter as a teenager and I found her in a bathtub like this? And it was really bad. Like, these are tragic, terrible, the lowest human beings can feel in their lives, and we need to do better as society and as mental health is so poorly resourced in this country, as our viewers are telling us, right?
Z, have you had a friend kill themselves?
I have known several people who've killed themselves, not a close friend, but people, associates from school, from medical environments, because it's such a high prevalence in our healthcare environments for a variety of reasons, which is a whole nother show, right? But I mean, have you had anybody kill themselves?
Yeah, my friend's younger brother, who I grew up with, killed himself at 17.
Yeah.
To same reason, like in the show, basically to send a message to the family: you didn't love me, you didn't take care of me, you didn't.
Yeah,
you know.
I mean, it's really bad, and I'm sure there are lots of people in the ZPEG. Now, one thing that does happen that I think is interesting, you brought up. Sort of people coming into suicide hotlines, et cetera. I've had quite a few viewers of the show or off Facebook in general, members of the ZPEC, who have emailed me saying I'm suicidal. They've private messaged me and given me some details of, like, you know, they don't say they have a plan, this or this. I mean, my first responsibility when that happens, first of all, please don't do that, because I understand why you're doing it, but I cannot help you. What I will do is I will report the message to Facebook. Facebook has a whole protocol for dealing with what is perceived suicidal behavior or ideation on the platform. And they will follow up, although they will always tell you if you think someone's in imminent danger, you need to call 911. So if you think someone has a plan, if you think a friend has a plan, if they're expressing ideation on Facebook, there are ways to reach out. You should definitely reach out to them, but you can also let Facebook know, and Facebook will go through a process. I don't know specifically what it is, but I know they do try to reach out to the person and send them resources and those sort of things.
Actually, quite a few members of the ZPEC in the comments are telling their stories about different suicide attempts.
Yeah.
And this is something that, you know, does affect medical professionals to a severe degree.
It affects us
all. And all frontline care providers, you know, EMT, paramedic, firefighter, cops, you know.
And what we don't understand about our EMT colleagues a lot of the time is that they suffer from PTSD. And a lot of time it's undiagnosed. Because imagine, like, Tom, you just showed me a phone with a girl pretending to kill herself.
Yeah, that's an actress. They're in a set.
And not even a very good actress.
Right.
And she's pretending to kill herself. And I'm traumatized. Like, I'm having trouble not getting the image out of my head. Imagine you're an actual frontline medical responder, EMS, ER, paramedic, all these guys. They're seeing this stuff on the daily, right? And if it doesn't affect you, then you're probably not really on the spectrum of human in some way, right? If it doesn't affect you in some way, and a lot of people are affected deeply, and then that then translates into, can translate into mental health issues for those providers, such that they're now at risk. So this is a very vicious cycle, particularly in healthcare. And I think maybe that contributes, kind of wrapping that piece around, to the idea that we may have a bias, conscious or unconscious, against people who attempt suicide that show up in the emergency department or in the ICU.
Real quick, Z, Heather Stiles put the number for the suicide hotline prevention in the United States.
I see it here.
If you guys could like that so it goes to the top of the feed, I'd appreciate that. And thank you, Heather.
Logan, do you mind putting it in as a comment? Do you see it there? So we'll flash that at the bottom of the screen, and maybe we'll leave it there on the bottom if we can.
Nancy Ellen Shores says, we see the worst of the worst.
We do. We see the worst of the worst. We see things that no human being should ever see. And then we are expected to go home and have dinner with the family and not talk about it. It's very, very hard for healthcare people to manage this. So, you know, the question of whether this show, I mean, let's look at some comments here. So on a lighter note, Z-Dog, you met our CMO at a conference in Chicago. I'm super jealous of him, Amanda Wilkie. I thought that was going to end with, and now he's got suicidal ideation, because that would have been a correct follow-up to meeting me. Thank you. That was nice of you, Amanda. And I do like the change of tone. But we should go back to the topic. Elizabeth Cicantelli, I have had PTSD since childhood. There is life after PTSD, people. Exactly. Thanks for the phone number down there. For the podcast listeners, Suicide Prevention Hotline, 1-800-273-8255. It's 1-800-273-8255.
I see this in a lot of the comments, and I've had friends and family that have dealt with this personally. A lot of people are complaining that it seems that when they are suicidal, they have mental health problems like that, the first thing and the only thing people want to do is just drug them.
Yeah.
And live their whole life drugged.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, so this is a so what Logan is bringing up is this idea that, people sometimes will avoid the mental health industrial complex because of the heavy reliance on medication. And are we just drugging people into submission so that their mental illness smolders on the down low? Or are we missing a bigger picture, which is what is the hole in their life that's allowing this illness to exude out? What else is going on? Is there talk therapy, psychotherapy, cognitive behavioral therapy, other kind of therapy? Now, a great psychiatrist, a great psychologist will look at all those avenues, and every single one will tell you a lot of times medication is absolutely necessary as part of a broader strategy to take care of people. But when you do it to the exclusion of looking at the root cause and looking at therapy, looking at PTSD, looking at other things, we're in trouble. There are experimental medications too, like ketamine for PTSD. There's a lot of interesting work being done. Again, I can't speak to it because I don't know the research, but I'll say that this is a burgeoning field, particularly with all the military action we've had. PTSD is becoming more mainstream in a way that it wasn't before, and the stigma of it is decreasing, I hope and I think. And so research dollars will hopefully flow into it.
Alicia says, whether or not the show is romanticizing suicide or preventing it, the lack of resources is a huge problem. We keep psych patients in the ER for days, only to have to send them home after the blue slip runs out because there are no facilities with an open bed. And you know, it's crazy, Z, is because the nation's prison systems are the largest mental health hospitals in the country now.
Yeah, by
default.
By default, because we now hospitalize our mentally ill. This was a trend that started in the 80s, presumably when Ronald Reagan sort of opened up the mental hospitals and kind of closed them down. People ended up on the street. That's one of the theories. Whether or not it's true, I don't know. But I'll say that the prison system is a big source of it. The other thing you had mentioned about people waiting in the emergency department, this is a fact. So we room patients with mental health, severe mental illness in the emergency department because there are no beds for them anywhere in town here in Vegas. So you'll go to Summerlin Hospital ER, which is a private hospital that's for profit, and they will have people, young girls lined up, you know, with suicide attempts that have nowhere to go, and they're sitting in the hall in an emergency department. What a wonderful place to be to obtain balanced mental health, to sit in the ER hallway next to a screaming drunk and someone faking a seizure, right? So it's the worst possible thing. And whenever I go and round at UMC Hospital, our county hospital, which by the way, we're gonna try to get their staff on the show because that's an amazing place. I see this in the emergency department all the time. Mental health is a huge problem. And actually, in communities that are served by county hospitals, you'll see a real variety of mental health issues that are really specific, like the transgender community here, sex trafficking in Vegas. And you'll see a transgender individual in the, you know, tried a suicide attempt. And in that population, how do you even begin to have a sensitive conversation? There's so much stuff that can go wrong. And also that reminds me also of the idea that how do you even talk to someone who's had a suicide attempt in an ICU? I remember the first time I'd had to deal with it as an attending at one of our community hospitals in the Bay Area, talking to a 16-year-old girl who tried to kill herself. I'm walking in, I'm like a 32-year-old guy, yeah, new attending, and I'm
So what'd you say?
I was like, yo, 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 trying to kill yourself is totally whack, girl. No, I didn't do that.
He went full Z-Dog on her, people.
I went full Z-Dog on her. No, I was literally, I walked in and I'm like, I know you're going through a really hard time. I really don't have words to kind of talk about it because I'm not an expert in this, but I'll say I'm gonna do everything I can to help you get better and help you get the help that I think you need. And you know, I'm gonna work with you and your parents to try to make things better. But I really didn't know what to do. I mean, I was paralyzed with stupidity.
This goes back to the compassionate care thing, I think, that we talked about on our empathy show, which is they really don't want to have their pain mirrored back at them. They want a calm, a guiding voice. That's why the suicide prevention hotline, I think, has worked for so many years, because people want to call in and talk to somebody.
They just want
not mirroring them back.
Right, right, right. And actually, I get the sense that the people who message me by private message, they want to be heard. And so the first thing I always do is I acknowledge that they're suffering. And again, it's not about reflecting pain back. Oh my God, that must be terrible. It's more about hearing them and providing a calm balance and a source of support, and the idea that that this too will pass, right? Because I think people who are very depressed or suffering from mental illness feel like there's no entity that'll lift the fog. Like, I mean, look, there's stupid ways to simulate this, right? Yesterday, I had a headache all day.
Right.
And I, for some reason, I woke up at 4 a.m. with this headache, which, by the way, I was thinking, do I need to go to the ER for this? And it just persisted all day, you know, typical low-grade tension headache, right? Probably muscle spasm. But it had colored my entire day so that I couldn't be creative, I couldn't function well, I couldn't edit video, and I just felt like things were never gonna get better. The whole Z-Dog MD thing was just a waste of time. It's all gonna fail. Logan.
Put the suicide number back up.
I hate you so much, Logan, and yet I love you because that was really funny. For the podcast people, he put up hashtag first world problems. They really are first world problems, but it's a minimum simulacrum of what it's like to have depression. Everything is seen through these sort of lenses, but instead of what me getting better today, you're still ill for a long time, and it adds up, and it feels terrible, and it feels like no one cares, and no one supports you, and your life is meaningless. You're no good. The future is bleak. There's a whole spectrum of things, right? And it's perception, and chemicals, and surroundings, and all those things together.
Marcy Abner wants to know why we're so judgmental of people who have mental illness. Why can't we just have empathy and compassion for them? And you know what? I'm going to admit to something. I have a fucky reaction towards people who kill themselves.
Like, tell me about that.
I have a really strong elephant reaction that is just, why would you do that? And I think it's because of my own personal weakness, and that I feel that I could be capable of killing myself somewhere deep down. So I want to think, that's not even in my realm of possibility, right?
Yeah.
And so I judge others to make that go away in myself.
How interesting. Do I have to put you on some kind of a watch now? Or are we going to have
L2K,
to
me, son.
L2K. I'm going to 5150 you because I'm from Cali, baby. No, but I mean, you know, and it takes, and again, people aren't vulnerable enough generally to even say stuff like that. But what I would say is, I'll tell you, you know, we had a couple of suicides in, I totally forgot about this, I blocked it out, in the organization Downtown Project that I was working for in downtown Las Vegas, young people and older people who were entrepreneurs who were under a lot of pressure and committed suicide. And, you know, it's hard not to have a reaction, especially when you're in the organization, that how selfish it is to do that, because it hurts everyone around them, their family and everybody else, and what a selfish thing. What we don't instinctively immediately do is go, oh my gosh, how much must they have been suffering that we didn't even know about, that they would choose to do this over all the other possibilities that they had. Like, this must be the worst kind of human suffering ever. And again, if you're compassionate, not empathic, empathy is feeling their pain and hurting and wanting to kill yourself. Compassion is having love and concern for them in the face of their suffering, but it can be a detached love and concern. It can be a broad love and concern, and it's unconditional. It has nothing to do with their behavior. It has to do with them as a human being and a conscious entity that's suffering.
Benjamin Sagisi says, does he have a plan? You talking about me? Like, to kill myself?
Okay, you guys got to understand this. Tom Heineber never has a plan for anything. So even if he were suicidal, it would be one of those things where it would be so impulsive. He would just go, oh, this is what I'm doing. And you're like, God damn it, Tom, we didn't have a chance to save you because you never write anything down. I don't think you know how to use email. I'm pretty sure I sent him a Word document once and he was like, what app does this document open in? So it's a, you know, it's a different way of thinking, which is why he's a great creative type. Otherwise, I'd be really even more boring than I am.
Den Ellen says meds may not cure, but they can help.
Yeah, I agree. They can help.
And they're the only thing we have right now.
They're the only tool
in the toolbox other than talk therapy.
Well, there's cognitive behavioral talk therapy. There's medications. There are electroconvulsive therapy, so shock therapy in the classic sense. So ECT therapy can be very, very, very effective in severe refractory depression. So that's my understanding of the current armamentarium. But there are even other things like group therapy, meditation. Now, sometimes meditation, serious meditation, can be dangerous for people with mental illness because it unmasks underlying very loud stuff that's going on. And so sometimes meditation retreats where you're silent for a long time, living with, stewing in your own stuff, can be tricky if you don't have good guidance.
What do you think about bullying? You think bullying can lead to suicide in teens and young adults?
This is an interesting question because my elephant's like, man up and quit being bullied, and why would you kill yourself? You're still letting the bully win, right? But then my actual rational, compassionate brain says, no, yes, it can trigger it, because what you're doing is you're pushing someone who's emotionally fragile because they're young and they're still forming an identity. And even if you're not, we care, we're social creatures, we care what other people think about us. Partially our identity is related to others around us. Anyone who, and actually they've done studies on this, John Haidt in The Righteous Mind talks about these studies. People who strongly proclaim on surveys that they don't care what other people think, when you actually test them out using a series of protocols, they care a lot what other people think. They're influenced by other people. So bullying has that effect because we're social creatures, right?
I think the ultimate bullying is ignoring.
Neglect?
Neglect.
You think so?
Yeah. Mm. I don't know how much of bullying that's leading to suicide is actual action. Mm. Because I used to bully my friends mercilessly, and I think all young men do. We just, like, you know, we sharpen ourselves against each other.
Yeah, yeah.
I think, you know, there were a lot of kids who we never even acknowledged their existence.
Mm. Yeah, I mean,
Tom is a bully.
Tom is a bully.
He's a bully. Let's still is.
I bully Logan.
He does.
He does kind of bully
one
Logan.
One day, Tom. One day.
He's like, you just gotta bully Logan. I'm like, okay, I can do that. No, I'm not gonna bully Logan. I used to be a little bit of a bully, but I was also bullied a lot. So it was kind of like a bully pecking order. I think we've talked about this. Yeah, like, you know, everybody has aspects of everything within them. If someone is suicidal, a person can also call the police and ask for a well check if they're resistant to getting help. Maureen Prasek. Yes, and the police are also very heavily burdened with our mental health issues in the U.S. By the way, the reason we're seeing an uptick in the death rate in, you know, middle-aged, say, white men is suicide is becoming a component of it. Accidental death, suicide, overdose. So there's something sick in our society that people are treating with suicide and narcotics that may be a little bit new, that maybe was smoldering but now has really come to the surface.
Did you know that 70% of all gun-related deaths are suicide in the U.S.?
70%?
70%, yeah.
So again,
I mean, you could find the specific
one. I'm gonna be honest on this one too. That's the reason I don't own a gun. Because I have super poor impulse control.
This is true. The other day, Tom was telling a story about how he was playing with a hammer in his lap, and it fell on the floor, almost smashed his foot. And so I had to play Papa Figure, and I was like, okay, Daddy's going to take this hammer away, he's going to put it here, and he's going to replace it with this squishy ball. Because Tom does have, I mean, he's impulsive, which makes him a great creative type, makes him a great director. I mean, he's just like, just do this, and we'll do it.
Just do it.
And it gets 10 million views. So
Silva Wendy says, I often wonder why this is the norm now. Why do we not hear about this growing up? Kids did not do this when I was a child. Kids see no way out in this day and age. What has changed?
The internet
is exacerbating all these problems 100%. I mean, kids are killing themselves on Facebook Live for attention and things like that. And that's a real concern with this 13 Reasons Why thing.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. By the way, for people who are just tuning in, the number at the bottom here is the suicide prevention number.
Do you think it's partially the parents' fault for letting their kids be on Facebook and all this stuff so young?
Well, so I think fault is a tricky piece. The question is, can parents do a better job managing screen time?
Yeah.
Because imagine this, Logan, like, let's say your dad, which you are. You have a son, Landon, 8 months old. All right, Landon now is 13, and he's on Facebook, and you have a busy life, and you can't control everything he does. He ends up, heaven forbid, something happens, he commits suicide due to something that's on there. You're gonna feel pretty bad, as it is. But if someone says, you know, is it the parents' fault that that they're not preventing social media? First of all, it's really hard, but I think parental modeling, parental involvement is an important piece of a kid's life. The question is, how do you hold, I mean, are parents culpable or is it more just a bigger
You know, okay, this is really interesting. Our generation was the first generation to have access to the tools of self-promotion before we had a self. And these algorithms and the way that everything is created on Facebook have actually shaped our behaviors and our self-worth as people. Like people, teenagers and all sorts of people will go back and delete pictures that didn't get enough likes, right?
Mm-hmm.
That is changing your behavior. It's saying this thing that you thought was valuable is not valuable, right?
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. I think you keyed in on before you have a sense, before you have a self, yourself is still a construct.
Yeah.
Although, you know, you, many would argue that the self is an evolving construct constantly because it is an illusion as it is. It's something that we create. It's a narrative. It's a feeling of a little guy behind your eyes. None of that is real. That's all illusion. Really, what we are is just awareness, but these things arise. So when you're young, you don't have a sense of what yourself is, and so social media is a key part of it. I'll be honest with you. This morning, yesterday when I had that horrible headache, I was like, I need to stop looking at my phone. I think I may be an internet addict. I'm constantly checking it, and it's stressing me out, and I'm worried about this edit, and I'm worried about that, and I have to give a talk. The reason we're doing this thing right now is that I got to fly to San Diego tonight because I got to have dinner with a client and then do a talk in the morning and then drive to LA, do another talk the next day, meet Devin, our audio producer, record this really cool track for Nurses Week that you guys are going to love. And so I'm a little stressed, and the whole time you're looking at your phone, and I'm convinced that I am an internet social media addict, and I don't think it's been good for my mental stability at all.
I'm heavily addicted to the internet. And you know what's interesting is, we talk about free speech in this country, but what we're really talking about when we say free speech is persuasion. Mm. We are all trying to persuade each other things all the time. And our brains, we have these gaping holes in our brain that we are open buckets to persuasion.
And the argument of the elephant and the writer, the little conscious guy at the top, exists to persuade others of your elephant's position. That's his role, because in our social, hyper-social societies, the people who win friends and influence others are the successful reproducers. It's an evolutionary thing. So it's very important. Persuasion is key. And now with social media, we have different avenues through which we can persuade people.
Real quick, Joseph says, explain the phone number. Joseph, the phone number is for the National Suicide Prevention Hotline. And if you're having troubles, please call the phone number below.
You know what? I just had a really crazy thought. What we should do is tell people that we have a suicide prevention hotline number up and put it there, but it's really the hotline to get to buy Z-Dog merchandise.
Yes.
And once they call, they're like, crap, you know, I was suicidal, but I could get that dope Health 3.0 flask. I'm going to buy that instead.
By the way, we hit 500,000.
Oh!
Z-Pack's at 500,000, y'all.
Z-Pack, we are at 500,000 strong. If you don't think we are a powerful tribe that can make a dent in the universe, you are sadly mistaken. Pretty soon, Oz is going to be like, what? Oz has 3 million followers on Facebook. We have 500,000. We can beat him easily without a single muggle being involved.
Actually, I think Oz has 6, homeboy.
God damn it. The bass and the tweeters make the speakers go to war. Ah, the mighty trumpet brings the freaks out to the floor. The bass
and the tweeters make the speakers go to war. Ah. Okay, can I just say, with the phone number at the bottom, that now looks like it's for a sex line.
I just don't.
Oh my God.
I've said this before. I hate you guys so much. I really do. I really do. You know, let me tell you
this
something.
This is what happens when you're raised on social media, y'all.
I think the Z-Packers, 500,000 Z-Packers understand this show, the premise of this. Stanford trained, educated, UCSF Medical School, years of practice, serious physician, okay? And switch to camera two. That. Whatever that is.
Can I play that again?
Okay. Yes,
do
please,
it again.
Just play it again.
With the phone number. Oh. Wrong one. Wrong one. And the tweeters make the speakers go to war. Ah, the mighty trumpet brings the freaks out to the
floor. The bass and the tweeters make the speakers go. Call for a good time, Z-Dog MD. Guys, but we're really, really stoked that so many of you. We were doing the math the other day, Tom. We're like, well, this is like Fresno, California. Every person in Fresno, California hitting like. And then I looked up the population of Fresno, California, and I realized it was more like 1.5 million. And I was like, forget it.
Hey, Logan, Lisa says add suicide prevention hotline down here. Otherwise, it's useless. So can you do that, please?
Yeah, because otherwise they're going to think it's for merch. Z is juxtaposed by Tom and Logan. That's true.
Damn.
Is that a word?
I like Colleen Garvey. Just use juxtaposed. I like nice. That.
I was yelling at Tom today for saying anecdotal. I was like, Tom, it's anecdotal. He's like, no, it's anecdotal.
And I said, you know, Z, everybody in the South talks like that. I grew up in Arkansas, blah, blah, blah. And then he goes up to Mrs. Z-Dog, who grew up in South Carolina. And he goes, do people in the South talk like that? And she goes, no, I've never heard that in my life. I was like, you know what? Screw you guys. I'm going home.
This is a house of learned doctors, Tom Heinberg. Except for my kids. Soon. Love the realness, Z-Dog, Cynthia Ayers. Yeah. Thanks, Logan. Suicide Prevention Hotline. All right, so for the podcast people, listen, keep hitting share, keep hitting like, subscribe. Do this because we're going to bump that podcast up. It goes between like number 8 and number 28 on the iTunes charts. We need to get it to number 1. We need to beat Sam Harris and these other goons, okay? So you all need to share the eck. F out of that.
Can I just say that Brad, back in the comments a little bit ago, wanted us to talk about Aaron Hernandez. Aaron Hernandez was right. The Patriots tight end who was indicted for multiple murders and then convicted for multiple murders, and he just recently killed himself.
Yep.
And
you know who else killed himself? The Facebook killer, Easter Facebook killer. So how do we feel about convicted murderers and alleged murderers killing themselves?
I feel great about it.
I feel great about it, too. I don't know about this Aaron guy, but I'm glad that Mr. Easter Killer decided to check out the quick and easy way rather than costing the criminal justice system a ton of money. On that very upbeat note...
if you're really, a murderer, please do away with yourself.
Yes, right. You know what? Yeah, exactly. If the Suicide Prevention Hotline should have a phone tree. If you're a murderer trying to check out, press 1. That's really, really inappropriate. Now, speaking of inappropriate...
What's inappropriate about that?
Nothing. It's funny, people. Deal with it. By the way, speaking of funny, new Harry Potter clip coming tonight. Severus Snape discusses malpractice and covering your buttocks. It's going to be dope, people. Also, 500,000 snitches!
We got Z, one balloon.
One balloon is what I get for 500,000. For a million? The bass and the tweeters make the speakers go to war. Guys, seriously, the suicide thing, that is the prevention hotline below. Share it with people that you're worried about. Have a very low threshold for getting people help. If you're struggling, okay, reach out. People care about you. The future is not as bleak as you think it is. I know it's a struggle. We'll be talking about this more and more and more because we want to raise awareness and destigmatize mental illness in general, suicide in particular. And I don't know, man. You got anything else?
I think we pretty much out, y'all.
We out! 500 million? 500,000? Damn it.
Call the number below if you are having actual problems.
Yes. And if you're not, hit like, share this page, make it pop. Go.